Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets on a beautiful summer-like October day. I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's the great one, the Podfather, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
I'm excited. I hear that maybe your epic story is going to be told today. Retold?
Definitely not doing that today. That's going to be a whole episode. Are you talking about the fight with the little people wrestlers?
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
I don't want to get into that. We did get some requests for that via email.
It's 3 days before preseason. What better time is there to tell this story? There's going to be real things to talk about in 3 days.
Doug, if this season goes as expected, believe me, by November, we're going to be going into plenty of people wrestling stories.
This is the most pessimistic I've ever seen you about the Bulls. Okay. All right. So no little person wrestling story today. A story for a sadder time when we're more depressed later. We still have hope today. We want to keep it positive. All right.
Part of the reason why is because I'm working feverishly now after I got some updates on what happened and, you know, things I had blocked out of my memory, that I do want to kind of just write down kind of like a formal what happened, get some interviews with some of the people there to make it to me, the bigger picture is what can you learn from what happened? You know, what can the listener learn? And I think when you get down to it, you really have to know your audience. That's the biggest thing. So, you know, if we just spent the next 25 minutes just talking about geopolitical issues, I don't think it would go well with our audience, right? So we're going to talk about the Bulls. But I do agree that was the biggest issue, is not knowing the audience and who would come to see little wrestlers are not the same people who would like to listen to Beach Boys and Elvis and the Beatles for a good 2 hours.
That seems like a fair assessment. I don't know that there's a lot of crossover. I have like a thought every once in a while where like you combine two things you're aware of and you make this like, you know, really funny joke, but then you realize the audience of each side of these things has like no cross section. So the joke is like worthless because no one will ever understand it. And yeah, makes you sad. I think that's just where you're at in this point, you know, a cross section of audiences that just weren't going to have a lot of overlap.
I can't tell you how many times I've had these brilliant jokes, Doug, in the last 5 years, and I say something and no one has an idea what the heck I'm talking about. Like, I think I mentioned this before. There was a guy at the office that would always work out, and then he would put arm butter on his arms. So he'd walk in and he'd be like shining. And, you know, I'm like, he's a fine Latino young gentleman. And he'd walk in and I'd be like, who do you think you are? Ricardo Montalban? You know who Ricardo Montalban is, right?
No idea.
You do?
No.
You don't? Are you kidding me? Wait, you don't know who Ricardo Montalban is? Have you ever seen Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan?
Yeah, sure. Like, well, he played Khan.
This is what I mean. That was an excellent joke. Everybody look up and see who Ricardo Montalban is.
I believe you. It's an excellent joke. I'm just saying I don't remember the guy. Like,
well, he was also in Fantasy Island. You ever heard of Fantasy Island? Where the plane?
Yeah,
I've
heard of
it. He wasn't
again,
the guy saying
40 years ago. Like, I mean, that's...
Well, Doug, we're about the same age. I don't know what to tell
well,
you.
Well, I guess what we've learned is your memory is amazing. And so you've got all these great things from when you were like 8, and my memory sucks and I don't. I think that's...
Well,
that's
what I learned when I called him... When I learned my buddy Ricardo Montalban, the whole office had no idea what I was talking about, and I thought it was a very good joke. Because if you see Wrath of Khan, just Google Wrath of Khan, see that guy's got his shirt, you'll see what I mean. Anyhow, let's move on to the Chicago, the beloved Bull, with some big news this week. Big news. the growing love affest between Josh Giddey and Zach LaVine. So here's a quote from Josh from Casey Johnson on Twitter. Josh Giddey said he already feels some on-court chemistry with Zach LaVine that will improve as they play more together. Every interaction I've had with him so far has been great. He's unselfish, he makes right play, but when it's time to score, Zach can with the best of them. And then Zach shared, I thought, an interesting story. Zach LaVine says Josh Giddey has already hit a teammate in the face with an unexpected but wide-open pass in his second day of training camp, which I absolutely love. Quote-unquote, everybody better get their hands ready. So, first question to you is, who do you think that teammate was? And number two, are you as excited as I am about this budding friendship?
I don't know how excited you are. I have a hard time gauging anything with Josh Giddey with you as whether it's serious or sarcastic.
100% serious.
Yeah, 98%. I mean, look, it's the first few days of training camp, everything is always just roses and sunshine and puff stories and whatever. So, you know, Lonzo Ball's looked as best as he's ever looked and whatever. All that kind of stuff is all going on now. So we'll see what happens in a few months. But yeah, if Zach and Giddey have good chemistry, that's obviously a huge plus for the Bulls. I think the greater story that Zach came into training camp and, you know, really in his speech, you know, it just kind of started off with like, hey, I'm putting this all in the past. I'm here to do whatever role is asked of me. I'm in on the team, you know, went to the voluntary mini camp on his own dime all the way across the country. Like he lives in California, went to Miami for, you know, for 3 weeks, you know, and like everyone who went, you know, paid for it on his own. You know, to be with his teammates in a Bulls sanctioned event because they're not allowed to have official practices yet. So I think Zach's done all the right things to get back in the good graces of the team and try to be not even just professional, but more than professional, but to actually just buy in, like fully buy in. You know, everything seems that. So, you know, that's good. And, you know, to the extent that Giddey and Zach, who might be our two best players, you know, depending on how you look at it this year, are going to be on the same page, you know, that's obviously important. So, yeah, I mean, so far, so good. And I think it was Pat Williams who got hit in the face.
I'm trying to pressure our group of journalists who cover the team to get to the bottom of this important story. But as an aside, you brought up a really good point, which is Zach LaVine on Media Day. I thought handled that press conference with just incredible class, incredible professionalism. It led to a post that I had or a tweet that I had with a poll, one of my famous polls that I know you follow religiously. Zach LaVine handled yesterday's press conference with professionalism and a positive attitude, but the front office will still likely look to trade him. Zach is a fantastic player, but sometimes frustrating. Would you be content if he is still on our roster past the trade deadline? What say you, Doug Tonis?
I selected, I believe it was, I don't have the poll in front of me, but it was ever the third option, which was like, I don't care. You know, like,
so you have no preference.
No preference. Yeah. And I think it's just because it depends. Like, well, why is he off the roster? Did you get something good for him? Did you just get expiring contracts back? Did you have to give something up to get him off the roster? Like, all those details matter. Like, I don't think Zach is in a position to me where I'm like, oh, I would just hate having him on the roster. I think both of us have always kind of liked Zach LaVine. I think he's a good guy, like a good professional guy. Like, he's been in trade rumors for like 3 years. And, you know, like at one point he says, like, I'd be open to being traded. And, you know, people, you know, freak out about what a bad dude he is. Like, I think like a lot of the thing is, like, people conflate what is going on the basketball court with like how someone is as a person. And so it's like people who are upset that Zach LaVine is on a contract that maybe pays him a little more than he's worth, and that Zach LaVine maybe makes bad decisions in isolation at the end of games, then start, because of those frustrations, which are very real and impact the team, because of those frustrations start spilling into like Zach's a bad guy, or Zach does this, or Zach is selfish. Like, Zach does not, he seems the exact opposite of being a selfish player. Like, maybe he's not always making good decisions. Maybe he's too much in isolation sometimes. There's a lot of reasons why maybe he developed that attitude over the years. But, you know, like, Zach came in and he deferred to DeMar DeRozan right away. He's always the guy who tries to get Vooch going right away in games. You know, like, he's just not great at a lot of these other things you want him to be great at. But, like, it's not a mental, like, he's a jerk or selfish or anything else. Always has represented himself with class. And I think people, because they have these other very real and understandable frustrations that I share at times, they start taking those into these directions of that aren't true. You know, like, well, if I'm frustrated about this, then it just means he's a bad guy. And it just means like some of these other bad things. And I think that's been consistently unfair to Zach, who just seems like a good guy, like overall. Like, he just seems like a guy who cares about his teammates and works hard and, you know, puts the time in and, yeah, just has some flaws and maybe isn't the max caliber player, but is still a very good player.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I love Zach LaVine. I think he's a class act. But most importantly, I think he's a freaking awesome basketball player. And I think people have forgotten that. You know, he didn't play well last year. He had an injury issue end of the season. But there were still signs last year that he has a lot in the tank. And, I mean, he's 29 years old. He's right in his prime. And if he's healthy, as it appears that he is, I think he's going to have a fantastic season. And he's going to put up some major numbers. So We'll see how it goes. I'm excited to watch them. I will share the results of the poll. Let's get your prediction. The three options were, would you be content if he's still on our roster past the trade deadline? Yes, I hope Zach stays. No, I want him traded. And the last option was, I have no preference, the one you chose. What do you think the breakdown was?
I'm going to guess it's about 50% want him gone and about half and half in the other categories.
24.2% want him to stay. 48.1% want him traded. And the no preference is at 27.7. So good call there. Really interesting. I think that, I don't know, I agree with you. I have no preference. Like, I'm not going to be upset if he isn't traded. I like Zach LaVine. I think he's a good player, and I think he's going to help this team grow. You need a guy like that who can put up points. And he's an elite scorer, efficient scorer.
Yeah.
So when healthy, when right. So I'm not going to be depressed if he's on the team. I enjoy watching him play basketball.
Yeah, it's kind of complicated, right? Because, like, what is the Bulls' goal? Like, we're not tanking. We're not trying to collect lots of draft picks. We're not trying to be really bad. We're not really in position to get a lot better easily. And so because you sort of have what I would say a lot of fans feel is this kind of rudderless ship going forward, you know, it's hard to figure out what to do with Zach in a way. And I think a lot of the people who want him traded, some people I think just hate Zach. Like a lot of people just hate Zach and have kind of bought into some of this weird PR stuff. But a lot of people who maybe even don't hate Zach, they just feel like, well, we got to get Zach off the roster to get to the next phase of whatever we're doing. But with this front office, it's like, I have no idea what their next phase is. I don't even know that they're trying to get to a next phase. I don't know that they have any plan whatsoever. And so, you know, moving Zach just to get money back, like, I don't think you're going to spend Zach's money on something better than Zach next year as a free agent. And so if you don't get anything back for him draft pick wise, then what have you done? Like, where have you made this team better or set a direction of, like, we're going to try to build through the draft over a longer time horizon? Like, it's just hard to figure out, like, in a move where you move Zach, like, what is the end game after that move? And at the same time, it's hard to figure out what's the end game if you keep him on the roster. Like, and that's really comes down to management feeling like they don't have a cohesive strategy at this point in time.
I think my biggest frustration with this season has nothing to do with Zach LaVine. It's that if you look at the team for next year, you know, let's just assume they're going to be bad. I think they're going to be bad. I think they're going to win 25 games. I think they'll probably keep their draft pick and they get to bring a draft pick in. The biggest mistake this org made was adding a third year on that second contract. Now you got $20 million committed to, you know, the big recruiter, Vucevic, in year three. There was no need to add a year three. It should have been a team option or a manageable buyout. You would have had Lonzo's contract going off the books. You would have had another $20 million for Vuc going off the books, freeing up $40 million in space. You could have done some interesting things next year. But I honestly don't believe anybody's going to trade for Vucevic. I think you're stuck with him, and that's just an incredibly dumb move. Just beyond frustrating, and he does not fit into where this team's going. All we're talking about is playing faster. How does he fit into that? Since it's asinine. I don't know. Any thoughts on that before we go to the next topic?
You really want my thoughts on Vooch?
No, I just watched.
I mean,
what is your biggest thing that's bothering you as we go? Let's just assume the Bulls keep their pick this year. They draft whoever. Looking at the roster for next year, is there anything that really bothers you or that concerns you?
Really, just what I said last little thing. Like, I just feel like there's no cohesive strategy. Their strategy is just to hope to get lucky. We'll run through the season. Maybe if we keep our pick, then maybe we'll get someone good. But we're not really trying to keep our pick. We're going to try and win as many games as we can. We hope we don't keep the pick. Like, they aren't aiming towards anything. Like, they're just hoping the lottery gods just give them a number one, or that they just draft a superstar at number 15, or who knows? Like, they have no strategy or thought as to how to turn this team into something consistently good or build something. And, you know, that was, like, really clear in their press conference when it was just like, oh, we realized we needed to make changes, and we did, and now we need to wait to see what we have. Well, like, you're 4 years in, you know, you stuck with something for a long time that, like, was obvious it wasn't going to work after at least 1 year before you did it. It was, like, incredibly obvious. And I think to most experts, it was obvious it wasn't going to work before you even tried it. But so you stuck with that for a minimum 1 year too long, and probably even longer than that. And you let all your assets degrade so that you could do that. And then now you're like, well, we just have to see what we have. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I could not have any less trust or faith in this group to figure something out. Like, nothing they've ever done or said has given me even the tiniest indication that they are competent at their jobs.
Let's take a best case scenario. They finish, which I think is 25 wins. And as Big Dave likes to put it, the team is fun bad, which I 100% agree with. Like, I want to see, by the end of the year, I want to see, you know, Bouzelis playing a lot. And I want to see Giddey and him developing a rapport. So, you know, some really cool dunks. I already seen a great play from Lonzo Ball to Bouzelis. And did you see that clip? That shot of the alley-oop dunk looked awesome. You know, so to see some really cool plays, playing fast, losing games. But you're a front court player away from making things interesting. And, you know, getting one of these many super incredible talents, hopefully with a Cooper Flag next year, bringing a guy like that in, and now you're kind of cooking with gas. You have some talent. You have a Kobe White. You have an Io. You have Bouzelis, who's hopefully going to, you know, progress into a really good player, and a top-notch, you know, really blue-chip draft pick. I think that's the best-case scenario for this year.
Yeah, effectively, you just described, like, oh, I hope we get really lucky. All our players are really good, and we draft number one. Okay. Like, I hope we draft LeBron James. If that happens, we'll be great. Yep, I agree. But, like, that's not a plan. You've not done anything to maximize your odds of any of these things. Like, you're just rolling around. Like, yeah, I guess you can root to get a generational talent every draft. Like, if that's your plan, okay. But that does not strike me as a plan that inspires confidence.
This is a very good draft.
Especially when they explicitly said, we want to win every game. Like they're not. And I get they're not going to go out there and say we're going to aim for the lottery. So, you know, but like there's nothing like, oh, we're willing to, you know, they could couch that and like, you know, we really want to see Modest develop. We really want to lean on our young guys. We really want to do some of these things. We're willing to, you know, take some hits to allow these guys to get minutes. Like you could say things like that and you didn't, you know, like they even went the opposite and said like, yeah, Bouzelis might develop by learning to deal with adversity of not playing. Like, okay, so like, you know, like Donovan came out and kind of said like, yeah, Bouzelis might not play a whole lot. And so, you know, they don't look like they're going to try to aim for that. Like they might back into it accidentally, but again, that's not a plan. And so like you asked what my big concern is. My big concern is that we have mediocre talent. We have no star talent. We're not aiming to get star talent. We're not aiming to get under the cap. We're not aiming to get extra draft picks. We're not aiming to do any of the things that could increase the asset base. We're just kind of rolling through the season with what we have, and we'll take whatever happens, and we're not like trying really to do anything. And that's all in leadership.
Chris Herring recently had an article, before we get off this topic, about trading Zach LaVine for Ben Simmons. Would you be in favor of that trade?
Probably not, no.
Even though it's an expiring deal for Ben Simmons?
I think I just like Zach LaVine enough to think he can rehab his value and be worth more.
Fair argument. You know, I agree with that.
If you look at it, it's like, so what are the real problems with Zach? It's not that he can't play at all, right? It's that his contract is really big and there was length to it. And these things are both going to be less and less, right? The salary cap is going to rise 10% this year and next year because of the new TV deal. So his contract relatively is going to get smaller. The number of years on it is going to get less. And so, you know, if some team was like, yeah, I don't know that I want Zach LaVine for 3.5 years, you know, at like effectively $185 million or whatever it was. Okay, I get that. But now this summer, you're talking about Zach LaVine at 2 years and $90 million. And, you know, that $45 million a year or whatever, it's a lower percentage of the cap than it was 2 years ago, because the cap is now rising faster than his raises. And so, and everyone has more room, right? Because all of a sudden you're getting like 18 more million in cap room this year than you had the year before. So you like maybe have more space. So I just feel like the market for Zach is going to increase as time goes on, because the biggest negatives to him are really the cost. And that cost is going to be less and less a factor. Like there's a lot less risk for taking Zach LaVine for 2 years, right? Like that's very low risk compared to like 3.5 years. You know, if something happens to him, you know, it's like, all right, well, you got to eat 1 year. Like that's just not a big deal anymore. So I just feel like there's going to be better opportunities to do something more and get something better out of Zach. And, you know, so that's my overall rationale on that. If I thought this team was one that would be like, we're going to just commit to the draft and we're going to be bad and we're going to move Kobe and Io, we're going to get a lot of extra draft picks and we're going to do that, then I'd be like, all right, move Zach LaVine, get all the cap room back, start using the cap room to acquire extra picks. You don't want Zach potentially adding wins to the roster. So I'd be okay moving Zach for Simmons in a strategy where you are going to leverage a bunch of other things to kind of drive towards an outcome. But I just don't have faith that we're going to take that type of strategy where we combine like a bunch of things to make this move make sense. And that's like the greater problem for me with a Zach trade for just an expiring.
I think the other risk is, though, obviously his health history, justified or not. I mean, obviously ended last year.
Yeah, sure, justified.
IR. Justified. That causes a lot of concerns for teams. But that would also be mitigated if he starts out this year playing every game and just kicking ass.
Yeah, if he's healthy at the end of this year.
Which I think is possible.
If he has a healthy season, say he plays 72 games. He misses a few back-to-backs, maybe has like some minor injury. But if he plays, say, 72 games and has a good season, I think he's going to have plenty of value in the offseason. Like a year, from that health will make it go away. And then, you know, like I said, so but it is on Zach to have a good year. Like he could have a bad year this year and he's completely untradeable, right? Like if he has another injury, if he plays half the games or if he shoots poorly again, you know, like it could go either way. You know, I'm maybe a Zach optimist in what I think he'll do this year, but you know, I acknowledge completely the idea that it might not turn out that way.
I can absolutely see a exact trade, you know, like at the trade deadline with one of the LA teams, or, you know, I think both of those teams would be the ones to look at. You know, I don't know how the machinations of that trade would be, but I think that's absolutely there if he proves that he is back to what we expect from Zach. Let's move on to the next topic. As an aside, I thought this was a good topic. They asked Josh Giddey what his favorite candy was in the Chicago Bulls Twitter. You know, they have that entertainment section where they kind of, you know, make fun jokes. Did you see this?
I didn't see that one. I saw the hot wings thing or something, like where you got boneless or bone-in wings.
Yeah, go through the okay. Floor, depending. Yeah, what do you like, by the way, for that?
Me, I'm a boneless wing guy.
Me too.
I get the idea that boneless wings are really just chicken tenders. Like, I completely agree with that. They're not wings. You just stop calling them wings. They're chicken tenders. But chicken tenders are superior to wings.
Yeah, so I think we've solved that problem. But what your favorite candy? What's your favorite candy for Josh Giddey? And then Doug Tonis, provide us with your favorite candy as we approach Halloween.
I am. I'm not a candy guy. I actually don't really like any candies.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't.
Not even one.
I mean, like, it's fine. Like, I don't like hate them, but I don't eat candy pretty much ever. I would say if I had to pick something, I'd maybe go with like a Crunch Bar. Yeah, like something in that realm. It doesn't have to exactly be the Crunch Bar, but like the, you know, the crispy.
You got a brand for it? Come on.
Well, it's Crunch.
What is this?
Are Crunch is the bar, like, right? It's Crunch.
Oh, Nestle Crunch. There's an actual bar named Crunch Bar?
It's Nestle Crunch. It's like a rice. Basically, oh, it's like a Rice Krispie treat covered with chocolate, but like very thin, like effectively something.
Yeah,
like
that. That's the wrong answer, DT. I think the best answer is, well, first of all, Giddey said Nerds gummy clusters, which is, I've noticed, very popular with the kids.
Never tried one, so extremely maybe it's popular. Fantastic.
Just had one maybe a week ago for the first time, and it was okay. I mean, it was fine. I wouldn't call it elite. The best candy ever made is a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. It is still the standard. If you're wandering in a forest for 2 weeks, you come out of the forest and there's a candy bar there, you hope it's a Reese's.
Well, I mean, I'm allergic to peanut butter and almonds and all other nuts.
Oh, so is my son.
So, you know, like the Reese's Pieces would just be something I couldn't eat. So it'd be super sad if I came out of a forest and I was presented with candy that would kill me if I ate it. So I'm going to go with I disagree. And
well, that explains.
May explain some of my candy choices to you. Like when you can't have any type of nuts, like, boy, does that limit a lot of the candy you can eat. Like, I'm down to like pure chocolate,
that's a good point.
Milky Ways, and like Kit Kats and Crunch Bars. Like, there's not, you know, or just like the straight sugary stuff. Like, you know, I think a lot of complicated M&M's, textured M&M's stuff is with peanut butter and nuts. And I get if you can eat those things, those are probably fantastic. But not something I can appreciate.
I'm sorry, I wasn't aware of that. And that explains your complete apathy towards the candy bar. So We'll move on in a moment of silence. But I do agree, like, that would be horrible if you did walk out of a forest and all of a sudden there's five candy choices, all with peanuts or peanut butter. I did want to get into it to wrap this up in our last topic. It is kind of a topic we have to broach, which is the signing. Well, it's kind of weird. I don't know all the reasons why.
I'll explain what they were thinking. Just go ahead with your lead-in.
Are you talking about Joshua Primo?
Yeah, there's nothing else it could be, right? So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, first of all, they cut Marcus Domask, who went to U of I, who I liked a lot. But his basic move at U of I was, like, backing down as a guard slash wing, backing down the opponent, so it didn't really fit in. It was kind of – he's a very, you know, super poor, destitute man's version of DeMar DeRozan. So he clearly didn't fit. They cut him, and then they signed Joshua Primo to an Exhibit 10 contract. What say you?
I think the thing that – and I posted this on Twitter, one of my amazing tweets. I'm going to just steal that phrase from you now. Which was, like, the thing that was dumbest about this is all it did was then just bring out this wave of, like, Josh Giddey and Josh Primo – you know, like the Josh boys, like, doing inappropriate things or, like, whatever. And so it, like, brought all this heat onto Josh Giddey that, you know, maybe was just people weren't talking about again, and it brought it back up to the surface. And I think that negative is actually bigger than any possible gain they were going to get out of Josh Primo, and that just made it on its own a poor decision. The reason they signed him and they cut him on the same day is on an Exhibit 10 contract. I believe what the case is, when they sign him and cut him, they can then sign him to their G League team. They then have exclusive rights to him. And then they can also pay him more money than the standard G League contract. And so it's kind of like this conversion thing. So that's why they signed and cut him. It was, like, planned that it was going to be this way. It gets him a bonus, and then it gives them kind of exclusive rights to it. And whatever, former lottery pick, you know, just 3 years in, hasn't really shown a whole lot, but, you know, obviously had the talent at one point that people were interested. And so if you're looking at a guy who's going to be a pure league, G League player, I can see why someone would make the case that Josh Primo has like more upside than a typical guy in this situation, you know, based on his pedigree and whatever. And the fact that, you know, at least some portion of his failure was due to extenuating circumstances that aren't related to basketball, even if they are completely related to Josh Primo, the person. And, you know, I don't know that, like, there's reason to be super optimistic that these things are going to get better.
Yeah, I was confused by this whole process, and I don't know the details behind, you know, what happened other than the NBA announcement, which was, I remember reading that he was suspended for 4 games without pay for conduct detrimental to the league. The league conducted an investigation and consulted with relevant experts. Following the process, the league found that Primo engaged in inappropriate and offensive behavior by exposing himself to women. Primo maintains that his contact was not intentional, and the league did not find evidence that he engaged in any sexual or other misconduct apart from these brief exposures. Nevertheless, this behavior does not conform to league standards and warrants discipline, end quote. I will say, after having discussions with some prominent members of Bulls Twitter who are female, they've also suffered at the hands of dopes who decide to take a picture of, whatever and send it to them. I mean, it's mind-boggling that there's people out there who kind of, like, engage in this type of nonsense. But I think there's more people like that, unfortunately, than we would want to admit. Or maybe that's not a proper example, but I do know, like, wasn't there something with Draymond Green where he accidentally posted a picture of himself on, quote-unquote, accidentally, that ended up on, I thought, one of his social channels? If true, why in the world would you pick this guy up? Number one, he's a guard. It's like, it's so dumb.